Hi, I'm Luke, and I'm the founding partner of the Mission Wealth Management Group at UBS, where we work with entrepreneurs of growth companies.
Welcome, everybody, to Entrepreneurial Insights with Luke Irvin. And today we have the good fortune of having Jabez Labrette with us. He is an entrepreneur I know through a local organization in town, focused in the education tech space, or ed tech. I don't know if that's an official term, but if it's not, I just coined it. So with that, welcome, Jabez.
Luke, thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. Thanks for joining us. So yeah, I think if we could get started, if you could just give us a little background on yourself and kind of how you've gotten to where you are in the education technology space.
Yeah. You know, I come from a general entrepreneur's kind of background. You know, I had some skill sets. I struck out, started my own company, eventually decided I wanted to make a little bit different impact in education, the education space. And in doing so, started a school, a high school. That was a crazy experience. And then, switched, had to make a pivot. Now I'm into education technology. Figured the best of both worlds, business and education all at the same time.
Absolutely. What is it about the education field that has lured you in or is of interest to you?
Yeah, I was not a good student. I come from a pretty storied childhood, and school just was not a priority for me, you know. But along the way, I had so many people that really stepped in to help me out, you know, whether that was teachers or friends, parents, in so many situations. And that really helped me from going completely off the deep end and falling through the cracks. And so being able to have been given people to care and support, eventually I was like, man, there's so many kids like me out in the world that need other people that are smart and can jump in and help, that it's just something I got to do. I can't wait till I get old to give back to kids. I want to make a difference now. And so it kind of just got me. Once it got me, I couldn't resist.
Sure, sure. And I know you've shared with me in the past your childhood and especially the formative years, it sounds like, in high school. Would you mind sharing with our listeners kind of how that panned out?
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I think that sometimes we go through life and we don't realize maybe the stories that have impacted the people that we're talking to. You know, I always try to be mindful of recognizing that people have journeys that they took to get to where they are in life. And those journeys can often contain some crazy stories. And when I was 16, I ended up homeless. My mom's mentally ill and she had a relapse. And, you know, that was through no choice of my own. But next thing I knew, the next day, I had nowhere to live. You know, I was stuck in my car for a few weeks and had the fortune of some folks, adults who noticed and paid attention and looked out for me and stepped in and said, hey, no, we got to get you some help here. And I couch surfed for my junior and senior year. Had a group of friends' parents who would let me stay at their house in kind of a rotation. Yeah, through high school. But I still ended up not graduating from high school, which took work. It can be hard not to graduate. And eventually went back, got my GED and went on to college. But yeah, it was a rough go there for a little while, but I'm fortunate to have made it out alive.
Absolutely. And so after college, and first of all, that's very inspiring, but after you did go to college, I know you worked at Nordstrom, I believe, right? In their finance department?
I did. That was my first career. I went to Gonzaga University up in Spokane, Washington, and studied finance and marketing. And then I got a job at Nordstrom as an elf at their Santa's Lane as a joke. So my friend's wife worked at Nordstrom in their corporate office, and an email went out to corporate and said, hey, we're looking for elves for Santa's Lane. And all of my friends started betting if I would take the job. And then they started putting over-unders on how long I would keep the job. And so I was like, not one to back down from a challenge. I put in some of my own money and said, that's it. I'm in and I'm staying the whole doggone season. So I went and applied, and I remember the hiring manager was like, wait, let me get this straight. So you just graduated with your degree in finance and you want to be an elf? And I was like, listen, I'm going to be really honest. My friends are daring me to do this, and there's a betting pool going on, and I swear I will work my tail off for you if you let me do this. I will be your best employee. And she was like, that's the craziest thing I've ever heard. All right, fine, you're hired. So I literally donned like yellow tights and like a green dress. They didn't have male elf outfits because I was the only male who applied. And I'm 6 foot tall, average build guy. So it was freaking hilarious. But after my Elston, I went ahead and interviewed the corporate and eventually was a financial analyst managing the flagship store's P&L up there in Seattle. So it was kind of a fun start to my career.
That is, you often hear the stories of the CEO that started from the bottom up, stocking the shelves all the way up to the C-suite, you know, and you could say you started as an elf all the way up to the finance
department. Started shucking gingerbread cookies and hot cider. That was my start.
I love it. So then after Nordstrom, you know, working for a very large company, from there, did you hop right in? You got bit by the entrepreneurial bug and just started jumping into starting your own businesses?
Yeah, kind of. I was at Nordstrom for 6 years, and it was a formidable, wonderful experience. I learned so much working for that organization about just service and leadership and support and money, how to manage money and on large, you know, we had a $33 million P&L. And so, you know, I learned so much. But I really thought I wanted to be a recovery CEO, someone who comes in when a company is dying, turns it around, and then moves on to the next company. And in order to do that, there were some skill sets that I was missing. And so I kind of like left Nordstrom to try to go get some of those skill sets. And I got myself a mentor from Accenture. And he was coming near retirement and had flown all over the world and basically was a fix-it CEO from a consulting side of the fence perspective. He'd go into the companies that they would acquire, turn them around. And I asked him one day point blank, I said, well, if you were me, what don't I know that you wish I would know? And he says, well, I wish that somebody had told me just don't do it. Like, it's a terrible job. He's like, yeah, you're gonna make a ton of money, but you're gonna hate it. And I was like, what? Like, oh, wait a minute. And so I had this like existential crisis for like 6 months because I pretty much determined that was what I wanted to do. And, you know, he was like, why don't you just go start a small company? And I was like, you can do that? Like, just go do it? He's like, yeah, that's pretty much how they all start. I was like, I guess that makes sense. Somebody's just there and they're like, yeah, I'm just going to start a company. And then they start a company. So I went out and did that. And, you know, that was its own learning journey.
Hmm. What kind of company was this? Was this already in the education space or?
No. So far away. I was in Seattle, living in Seattle at the time. I had met this guy. He did video and audio production work. And I thought, man, you know what would be really cool to do is to run an advertising studio. And this was before Mad Men even came out, but I just thought it'd be fun. And so I found us a location, went out, raised $500,000, and then made every mistake possible. Like, we opened up a production studio near downtown Seattle, and just literally every mistake I think you could make in business, I made in the first, like, year. And we were out of business in, like, 14 months. I mean, it was like a grand crash and burn. Unbelievable.
And so that from there, I'm sure you learned a lot from those mistakes. And did that segue straight into another venture? Or I guess what I'm trying to get at is how you've gotten from point A to point B, you know, the overall path of various companies and businesses that you've started and exited.
Anybody who's listening who's gone out of business will closely relate to this. And I hope that if anybody's listening and they do end up going out of business, this serves as a little bit of solace. It really sucks. Going out of business blows. We overhired, we overpurchased, we undersold. I mean, we did everything that we shouldn't have done and overleveraged the whole bit. And then we went out of business and I was like, what the heck do I do now? And so I did what I think everybody does when they go out of business. I became a consultant. Which is crazy because, like, who the heck hires someone who just went out of business? But oddly, people hire you if you're like, yeah, here's my resume. I did finance. I had a company. We went out of business. And these are the things I could bring. So I was a consultant for a couple of years, kind of licking my wounds before I settled back in and started another company. This time I found a better business partner, somebody who complemented my skill set well. And we opened up a marketing agency that worked only with lawyers. And so we did digital marketing specifically for lawyers. And we built that agency, that was in 2010, and we built that agency up to about 20, 25 staff in a few years, and we're running a really successful little gig there. You know, it was great. And that was the last kind of formal for-profit company I ran before I got the education bug about 4 years ago, and I sold my half of the company to my business partner and then made the full jump to open up a high school for underserved youth, you know, which was my last pre-COVID or during COVID venture, you know, which unfortunately global pandemic was not in my contingency planning. you know, and when that hit, that was our pilot year of boarding students. We were a boarding school, and, you know, a free boarding school for students who couldn't afford, you know, normal care, weren't getting support they needed at home. And unfortunately, free boarding school, middle of the pandemic, got to send everybody home. It's not really a sustainable model there. So that had to shutter its doors. In the spring, we sent the students home, and, you know, we kind of decided over time that we weren't going to be able to reopen. And that's when I was like, hey, I got to do something. And I still think I can make an impact. What is that something going to be? And I really think it's that easy these days, honestly, is if you step back and say, what do I have as a skill set? Who do I know? Where do I know people? Like, what industries or sectors are they in? And then what problem can I solve? And once you can identify a problem, then there's your company.
Sure. So I'm familiar with the charter school that you were running there. So it sounded like COVID forced you to pivot into a different direction. And then I know you pivoted since. Can you tell us about that latest venture?
Yeah, I joined a fledgling company. Here I am jumping in. It wasn't really fix it CEO style, but there was a company that was kind of struggling. You know, I tried to help them out a little bit. They took a pivot, which makes sense because I think there's been a lot of that going on during this chaos. And in that process, I ended up meeting a couple of folks who I really liked and felt were really smart and had some skills that I didn't. And I've got this huge repertoire of education contacts. And we sat down and we were putting our heads together for a while and saying, like, what kind of problem exists that we can solve? And I said, hey, here's an issue for schools. We capture data around school student assessment. So we go out there and we test students to find out what they know. And that's one indicator. But what we don't know is all of the questions the student has leading up to the test. And that's a kind of a mirrored side of the data. And so if assessment can tell us one thing, the query data leading up to the assessment is a whole another piece of the puzzle that doesn't exist right now in education. And so we're building a customized search engine for K-12 for students to be able to enter in questions, get answers back, kind of like a Google, but for students. And then we're going to use the query data to be able to extrapolate how well students are doing, how well classes are doing, and how well grade levels are doing.
That's great. That sounds like there's certainly a big addressable market there. So what stage are you at the company? Have you begun fundraising? How are things going there?
We're doing this one a little different. You know, my marketing agency that my business partner and I started in 2010 had a couple opportunities to receive some investment funding. And we made what I consider a pretty classical entrepreneur decision. We had bootstrapped the company, spent all of our own money. And we looked at the investment. We thought, are you serious? Are we going to cough up equity for like some investments? Let's just go sell some more stuff. Both of us would tell you now that was a mistake. Equity puts gasoline in the engine to help it move faster and farther. And I wish we would have taken investment back in the you know, teens, 2015, 2014 time when it was available. And we didn't. So this time I'm doing investment up front. I'm just going to get it at the beginning and head kind of more the institutional regular investment route, which I never thought I would ever do. I always was a bootstrap entrepreneur, but I really do think there's value and advantages to other people's capital to open up markets and really help you accelerate the growth. It's really what it's about is getting there faster.
Sure. And so have you begun actually doing these cap raises, or is this kind of the next step?
Yeah, so we've already put out our kind of preliminary water testing just in the last week. We reached out to a series of contacts that we have in the DC world that do education work to start to get ready to get the meetings. We're pulling together kind of, interestingly, we're using a podcast for our part of our raise, and that we're going to interview venture capital firms on companies that almost failed but barely made it, highlighting the venture capital firm to get us a conversation with the principals and utilize that. So it'll probably be about a 3-month round. We're trying to close just over $1.5 million in the seed round, you know, so we'll know in a few months if we got something the industry's interested in.
That's great. That's very exciting. So up to this point, it's been a fascinating career, right? Starting in the major company as an elf. Okay. Transitioning to their finance department and then starting an advertising agency, a marketing company,
and then two or three different companies within the educational tech space, or education slash ed tech. That's the term I just coined.
It is ed tech. You were a little behind on the coming of it, but smart enough to have gotten there.
All right, so well, good.
You get to take a bonus point for having made it there.
That's good. That's great.
But then I also know that you, because of your background, you also do some speaking engagements, things like that. Is this mostly around education? Is it mostly around entrepreneurial insights, or what exactly is it that you speak on? Your background? I mean, you have an interesting story.
I think speaking, there's two things that I think are incredibly important if you want to look at the long-term like flexibility of your career in life or your entrepreneurial journey. Speaking and writing, I think, are very, very, very important pillars to just the elasticity of your options, because it opens up so many doors. So I've been speaking now since I was in my early 20s. I started speaking as a motivational speaker at high schools and middle schools. And so I'd go tell them my story about being homeless and, you know, my near suicide attempt in high school and not graduating and going back to get my GED. And it was really that very traditional motivational speech, which was totally fun. And I loved it. I got to go. I made like $200 a speech. It was like I wasn't making any money. And I was traveling to like little towns outside of Reno, Nevada, you know, staying in the Motel 4 because I couldn't afford Motel 6, but loving it. You know, I was having my version of an impact on the kids and really got my chops speaking, and then started doing some speaking around some kind of management types topics, which was interesting because I was pretty young in my late 20s when I started doing that. And people were like, well, tell us how to manage millennials. So I'm on the older age of the millennial group, and they're like, we just want to know how to manage you. And I was like, oh, well, yeah, I can teach you how to do that. And so I developed a whole course and a whole keynote presentation around managing millennials, and did that for like 8 years, forever, it felt like. And in the meantime, I developed I have several continuing legal education accredited courses that I created that I deliver, and I've done speeches on all sorts of stuff. Now I just talk on all sorts of fun stuff that's interesting. A lot of education talks, a lot of tech talks, you know, and it's just, God, I've got to travel the world doing it, make some money at it. You know, it's just such a cool thing to get to do if you're so inclined to do public speaking. It is a really fun layer to add to the puzzle. And it ended up landing me my journalist roles. It was through public speaking. Through my speaking, I write for NBC, I write for Forbes. Like, that all happened because they saw me at a presentation, came up and said, hey, would you want to do some writing for NBC? And I was like, do people say no to that? I was like, that sounds amazing. Yes, I would love to.
That's great. So you've shared with us a lot of the challenges that a traditional or a typical entrepreneur has faced, you know, the failure, right? We've all experienced some sort of a failure and the forced of laying it all on the line and not having it work out. How do you bounce back from something like that and kind of maintain that spirit of, you know, I still got this, and this is, I'm going to make it work out, and this is what I'm going to do. How do you do that in your mind?
That's an interesting question. You know, I'd say my other moments in time where I kind of fallen down on my face, it was like, no big deal. I can always go find more money or go find another idea and go make it. I think the school was a little bit harder pill to swallow. You know, we had to send these kids back to their homes, and I knew what the home situation was like because I've been there, and because the reason that they ended up at our school is because life was not looking out very well for them at home. And I thought my resilience would be fine, and I'd just bounce back, and, you know, it is life. I couldn't have really, it was so out of our hands. There really wasn't anything I could do. But it took a toll, you know. I got a little bit depressed and really kind of struggled to right myself and get my footing back on the ground again. Reflecting back, when you get totally rocked, like, not like a little bit, but you just get just pummeled, something that I finally figured out, and it took me a minute, is I started focusing again on the things that I knew brought me like the spark. So, you know, that would be things that I enjoyed doing. That would be people that I enjoy being around. And that would also be things that inspired me. Like, what inspired, I looked to find out what inspired me, and then began reinvesting time into thinking about those things. And that began to get me excited again about achieving and building. You know, entrepreneurial journeys are a little bit lonely, and they're a tough road to haul, and they're hard. It's hard to do. And so you need a good amount of your own inspiration. And that inspiration for me isn't Tony Robbins, and it's not looking at, the inspiration isn't watching some videos online. So for some people, maybe that's their thing. But really for me, it was the visualization of where do I want to be? Why do I want to be there? What kind of impact do I want to have in the world? What kind of legacy do I want to leave my family? How do I want my son, who's 3 years old, to see me mm-hmm. in 10 years? Like, what person is that? And then how do I build that picture? And then really like grab onto that picture and say, okay, how do I get there? And then it starts to just build and really snowball from there.
Okay. So safe to say that your inspiration came from within, not necessarily, like you said, the Tony Robbins, not a book that you read, not a individual that you kind of looked up to. It was just looking internally and saying, you know what, I got this and I'm going to make this work.
I think I think some of it can come from external sources. And I think you're making a really good point here. Internally is maybe where you get the actual foundational drive. Mm-hmm. It can't be all external, because if it is all external, then you're going to run out of gas in the fuel tank, because you have to be able to replenish your own cup. Mm-hmm. And if you can't figure that out, then, you know, you need to take a step back for a second and clear your head.
Sure. And also, I have to imagine, I know you through the Entrepreneurs Organization local chapter here in San Diego. I imagine that's been a great support group for you as well in these kind of ups and downs that the journey has taken you. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. No, EO, Entrepreneurs Organization, it really has. The people inside EO are the kinds of people where you can reach out and say, hey, I'm having a little bit of a tough time. And legit 5 people will message you and say, like, hey, let's talk. Let's go grab coffee. Let's get on Zoom. Let's do whatever. You know, like, what are you dealing with? You know, and it's been a wonderful peer group to mm-hmm. have around. And I'm not alone. Several other of our chapter members got crushed. And several chapter members, their business went through the roof during the pandemic. It really kind of depends on your market, right?
Absolutely.
And so some of the businesses did really well, some of them did really bad, but everybody stepped in to make sure that everybody was okay. Even the people doing well who were dealing with some kind of, like, I would describe it as survivor's guilt. Some of them felt bad that they were doing so well. And I was like, don't feel bad. That is awesome. Like, let's talk about the challenges you're facing and the success you're having, because growth is painful, you know? And we really, I felt, leaned into each other, which is good to have that kind of group. Whatever group it is, find a group.
Absolutely. And then on the other side of the coin, you know, we talked about some of the challenges. What are some of the successes that you point to, or over your entrepreneurial journey, some of these inflection points through the various endeavors you've been a part of and looked at and said, you know what, this is, when I look back on it all, this is where I attribute some of the success to. Is there a moment in time, a benchmark that you hit that gave you some of that inspiration when you were running those businesses?
So my marketing agency has a real clear moment where we were about 4 years old, I think, maybe 5. I took a vacation for 7 days, and my business partner had a vacation scheduled at the exact same time. And so we both left, and the whole ship didn't burn down. And that was honest. Yeah, it's like a realization, like, oh my God, I don't have to be here. Like, I can literally, like, leave, and the business will survive. And that was a game changer. It really was like, oh my gosh, this thing is real. It's a business that runs, and I may not be as important as I think I am.
Well, that's what we often hear from a lot of our investment banking colleagues, is that a business isn't a business until it can survive without you, or that it can not survive, thrive without you, right? So you can take that extended time off, or you can focus on a passion project and the business will still be doing great things. So that sounds like what you're talking about.
Yeah, it's hard to do. You know, mm-hmm. I mean, it's stressful, but once you get there, you realize, oh, I should have done this sooner.
Absolutely. What words of wisdom or any points would you like to share with aspiring business owners or other entrepreneurs out there that might be going through some of these ups and downs that you've experienced over your career thus far?
Man, I mean, like, so peer group, right? Like, I think that's huge. And I should have, forgive me for not thinking about that. But yes, peer group is important. Finding people who can share this in the experiences that you're going through. I would say keep a journal, even if that's like quarterly or monthly or whatever, of kind of keeping yourself righted in the directions that you want to go, and really focus on, I'm going to be able to get where I need to go that I may not get there as fast as I want to or for as cheap as I want to. But as long as you can survive, that's 99% of the game in entrepreneurship is surviving.
Mm-hmm. And so I know you're in the midst of a funding round for this new venture, but beyond that, after you've secured the financing, what's next for you personally and the company?
Personally, I mean, it's work time, right? People start giving you money, they start having expectations. When it's just you, you're doing it yourself, that's a little different. Professionally, it's you know, hit the ground running, right? So once you start raising money, then all of a sudden, the moment you close your round, it is hiring, road mapping, implementation, fingers on keys, and how am I going to raise my next round of money? And so, you know, you kind of have to keep yourself simultaneously at 30,000 feet and on the ground at the same time, constantly. So it's definitely a challenge, you know, when you've got people handing you cash, they want to see results and they want to see the ship moving. And so that's going to require you doing a lot of things. And that's okay. That's what entrepreneurs are good at, right? Wearing all the hats when we have to. I'll clean the toilets. I'm not above any job.
You've been an elf, so you can do anything.
That's so true.
Speaking of, I don't think I'm going to ever be able to look at you the same now that I'm just going to, whenever I see you, I'm going to see an elf, Buddy the Elf.
I'll spare you the picture.
Please do. Well, great. Well, you know, last question before we really get wrapped up here. I know you went to Gonzaga. I don't think you know this, but I went to a, not such a small school, but a school called Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina, who's in the play-in game. So if we win on Thursday, we're going to be playing you guys. My question for you is, can you reach out to Mark Few and ask him to just maybe go a little easy on us? Not a, yeah.
Oh, man. You know what? We almost lost the 16-1 seed game in the past. I'm not going to jinx ourselves and say that we have a guaranteed win here, because every game is equally as important and equally challenging. So
that's
no
right.
Question about it. Looking forward to it. Congratulations on the seed. It makes March a little bit more exciting.
It does. It does. No question about it. So before we wrap up, how can people get a hold of you to learn more about you, what you're up to, your company?
Yeah, I'm a LinkedIn and Twitter nerd. So if people are into LinkedIn or Twitter, that's generally the best place to find me. My name can be a little challenging to spell. I'm probably the only Jabez LeBret out there. It's J-A-B as a boy, E-Z, and just L-E-B-R-E-T. So if people want to connect, I love staying in touch with people. I love new connections. I love connecting with all sorts of different professionals and entrepreneurs. So please do reach out and let's stay connected and see if we can help our communities grow.
Excellent, Jabez. Well, thank you so much for taking the time. We're rooting for your success. Maybe not so much the, you know, the Zags here in the first round, but, you know, overall, I know you're up to great things. So thank you again for being a part of the podcast, and we'll be in touch.
Luke, thank you so much. I really appreciate it.
All right. Take care.
And these tough times helped him be able to persevere in business. I mean, for me, it really put things into perspective. Being homeless at such a formative age makes a fledgling business seem like not that big of a deal. It reminds me of Muhammad Ali's quote, where you don't lose if you get knocked down, you lose if you stay down. And Jabez has proved time and time again he's been able to get up. The big business takeaway I had, and I alluded to it earlier, is when our clients are contemplating an exit, we help them understand that they, the business owner, must be able to step away from the business and still allow it to thrive. If all the knowledge, skills, relationships with customers and suppliers are reliant on the business owner themselves, then you are more than likely going to receive a discounted value for the business. So be sure to take a look at your management team and train them well enough to get to that point.
Thanks for joining us on Entrepreneurial Insights. If you have enjoyed this, please rate and subscribe to the podcast on Spotify. Email us at missionwealth@ubs.com with comments or suggestions. Visit our website at ubs.com/team/missionwealth, or connect with me on LinkedIn or Twitter at Luke SW Irvin.